Welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Hulley and Giannis Giannis. In this episode, we'll be looking back at the 2-2 draw for Fulham against Reading at the Medeski Stadium on Saturday. Before we get going, I'm going to bring on my co-host. Before I go to David, I just want to mention and want to wish everyone a happy Mother's Day in the UK and Ireland. It's not Mother's Day here, but I want to wish everyone in those parts of the world a very happy Mother's Day. Without further ado, though, now I have to bring on my co-host. David, how you doing?
Hi, Russ, and hello.
How was your Mother's Day, David?
He comes on, and yeah, happy Mother's Day to all the people over on this side. I know you have it. It's different in Europe as well, actually, as in the US. I think they have it in June in Europe mostly. Maybe the same for you guys. But Mother's Day in the UK and Ireland is linked to the date of Easter. So it's so many Sundays before Easter. So whenever Easter is, that's when Mother's Day is. So happy Mother's Day anyway to everyone, and hello to you, saying hello for Giannis as well.
Well, guess who's going to be on the line with us right now? Let's bring him on. Giannis, how you doing?
Hello.
Hello.
Giannis, how are you, my friend?
I'm pretty good. It's supposed to be mid-teens here in the week, and but I'm flying over to London next Friday. So I understand it might be a little bit colder there now.
Oh, well, then you're going to have to prepare, my friend. But what's interesting is that while we're doing this show, just so you know, Giannis, you're up in the Toronto area. I actually have in the background Toronto FC playing the New York Red Bulls.
Yeah, and you know what? My wife is out there ever suffering watching them, because TFC are like watching paint dry. apart from Giovinco, the rest of them have one leg between them.
Giovinco is unbelievable, by the way.
Oh, should never be in MLS. It's an absolute joke. But apart from that, I think I'd rather have a cup of coffee with my mother-in-law.
Okay, my friend.
And you know it's bad then.
I hear where you're going on that, my friend. All right, let's get into the show. We have 1 hour to talk about this match. David, I will start with you. You were at the Medeski. Just share with me your opening thoughts of what you saw.
Well, it was a match of sort of different phases, really. We started quite well, looked fairly comfortable, thought we might do well, got the lead, gave away a stupid equaliser, and then we were up against it and conceded another goal. And then, really, it was... You know, Reading were much more buoyed by this, but we did thankfully get back into the game. But second half was pretty flat, really, overall. And to be honest with you, and this is something that, you know, was disappointing for me, that I felt that we were just really hanging on for the last 15 minutes or so, just playing out the draw. We didn't seem to be that keen to try and win. It was more a case of not making sure we didn't lose it, which we didn't. But, you know, it's one of those things where before the match you could say, well, would I take a draw? Probably you would have said yes, because Reading have been in reasonable form, and an away point is always good. But the way we started, it's a bit disappointing, really.
David, I hear you on that, because I watched back the match this morning, and what was interesting is, like you said, the differences between the two halves, especially those final 15 minutes, we were holding on. Let's be honest here, and I don't know if that was Slavica's strategy, but it just seemed like in the very end. Again, my perception is they were playing for that point, and I think all 3 points were there for the taking. But it just seemed like in the very end we were kind of just holding on and got the point. And yes, before the match, David, I would have taken a point. I predicted a Fulham victory. You actually predicted a Fulham loss, so neither one of us got it right. But in the end, David, a point's a point, correct?
Yeah, a point is a point. I mean, I think... In some ways, you know, my prediction was a bit closer, because it really did look like it was going to be a defeat. And when you look at the stats, it's one of those ones where you'd probably say it was more of a point gained than for Reading, 2 points dropped. Certainly, I saw lots of tweets from Reading fans saying that it was a 2 points dropped, you know, in their perception. And when you look at the stats, you have a bit of sympathy for them. But I think when you see the actual game, it was fairly even. So it was just the fact that towards the end it was Reading who were pushing to try and win it, but we weren't really pushing. And there was a sizable Fulham crowd there, and we was trying to urge the team on. And it was frustrating that we weren't really going for it at the end. But I think it was clear tactics by Slavisa that with bringing Parker on and withdrawing Kearney as well, that was a sign of intent that he was looking to hold the game out rather than try and nick all the points.
Now, listen, I hear you. When the minute I saw that he was bringing on Parker, I had this feeling that they were just playing for the point. And I do think that was his strategy, especially near the end of that match. All right, over to you, Giannis. What are your thoughts about this 2-2 draw? You actually thought it was a good point. I saw your tweet right after the match.
Yeah.
Do you still feel the same way?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, whenever you go a goal down, the resilience piece is part of it. We've taken the lead. We've got off to a nice start. And then Fernando has given away a penalty that only he will know what he was thinking. Just daft. And then the Robson Kanu goal, which actually I thought was a super goal. Beautiful. Beautiful chip over by Ola John. That really was a lovely goal, even though it was from close range. And then Frederick's going on that nice marauding run that got us the penalty to get back. So you know what? At least it shows some resilience. We were hanging on near the end, I know. But I think in light of the collapse we had after the goal that we conceded, with the penalty, I'll take the point. Reading haven't had a bad season, and you know, it's never easy to get anything away from home. So the point's fine. I think we might have been a little lucky, but I'll take the point.
Okay, excellent there, my friend. All right, I'm going to go right back to you. Let's now talk about the starting 11, and I want to get your thoughts on it, but I also want to get your thoughts on the formation that Slavisa went with. The reason why I'm asking you off the bat is you're a coach, and he changed the formation. He went against three in the back. I want to get your thoughts. Why do you think he went with the change before the match, Giannis? You know, was he trying – did he see something from Reading before the match that he was trying to exploit? Why do you think he changed the formation and went with the starting 11 he went with? I'm curious your thoughts on this.
I think your first point nailed it. I think he saw something in Reading that he needed to counter, but it's a little surprising because Slavisa has always talked about not so much worrying about what the opposition is going to do, just be concerned with what you're going to do. And, you know, every time you see the lineup and you've got two words, the first one being Jazz and the second one being Richards, you know, I roll my eyes. And, you know, Danny Byrne didn't make it the starting 11. It looks a little odd, you know, McCormack playing out wide on the left, you know, Kearney essentially playing behind Musa, and it looked a little dysfunctional. Now, to defend Slavisa, you might have thought, well, this is just, I think we've got enough in the tank to stay up. We're going to be fine. This is another experiment to see if players are adaptable. And to be fair, again, we got off to a good start. And then, unfortunately, it was derailed by the Venezuelan nut bar. I don't know what drugs he's on sometimes, and I am a fan of his. But I am, you know, when he's playing well, he's really playing well. But when, I've not seen house leaguers make challenges like that. He just basically pushed the lad over for no reason, and it was poor. But I think he saw something there. I think he saw something in. He wanted to counter. He wanted to counteract Quinn and Kermagant, and I'm not so sure putting Mac on the same side as Robson Kanu was going to help. But he must have seen something and thought, well, I'm going to counter them with this formation and see what happens.
Okay, very good. That's why I wanted to ask you, you know, try to get in the mind of Slavisa what he was thinking of going into the match with the starting 11 and the formation to the Fulham website listed as a 4-2-3-1. David, you said you believed it was a 4-4-1-1. Have you changed your mind on that? You know, you were there, so share with me your thoughts on the starting 11, then of also, of course, the formation we're talking about.
Well, yeah, when I saw the 11, it was, oh, my God, here's Richards again. I was like, Giannis, I was thinking, what's going on? And I looked at the way that they notated it, and I could see that they'd listed the four defenders first and then the four midfielders, basically, then two strikers. So it looked, from the way they listed it, Fulham, as if it was going to be a straight 4-4-2. With Kearney and Fredericks probably as the wide men, with O'Hara and Baird in the middle and the two up front. But when we started, and before I get to that, there was a lot of speculation because we'd seen this joke story almost that Richards could play as a centre-back. And there's all these horror things going around on Twitter, people saying we're going to be playing three at the back with Richards as one of the three. And people
started
to believe in their own hype, but I didn't really think for a minute we
I didn't think for a minute we were going to see that, really.
I think it was all bit, maybe a bit of a double bluff, but and people getting the wrong end of the stick from what they'd said in the week, what Slavisa said in the week. So, and then Mike Gregg had noticed that the four defenders were warming up together. So that was pretty much a sign we were going to play some sort of 4-4-2 kind of scenario. But when we started, it was most certainly, it was 4-4-1-1. You can't say 4-2-3-1, really. Well, I suppose you could, but it depends how you look at it, because obviously Parker and Baird were holding, but, really, McCormack was as deep as they were, literally. I mean, Fredericks was probably more forward than McCormack was, if anything, overall. I haven't seen the average positions, but Kearney was certainly in front of everybody else except Dembele. So it was sort of a 4-4-1-1, really. And McCormack was very deep a lot of the time, and this is where, you know, talk about, you're saying, well, maybe we saw something in the Reading makeup to make a change, but for me, it was, you know, Slavisa was committing one of the cardinal sins. You know, and there's things we all know, you know, we're all expert coaches, us fans, you know, we always think we know more than everyone else, but there's things that we almost take as read now, and that is, one of them is Kearney must play central in a central position.
Right.
McCormack must play as a striker. Ross McCormack must play as a striker. We've seen him playing as a cam. We've seen him coming deep in midfield. We've seen him playing wide. They just don't work. You know, we're wasting, you know, our best striker, supposedly, you know, our top goal scorer, by leaving him, you know, away from the danger area. So it's fine saying, well, we're going to change this formation around because maybe, you know, there's something in it, a weakness, but in fact we're just making ourselves weak. And we did exactly the same thing last Saturday in a way. You know, we ended up playing Tunnicliffe as a sort of a cam at the start, and it was horrible, it was horrendous. It just didn't work at all. And for me yesterday, Dembele, although he worked hard, and I don't know, you've seen the replay now, he was isolated. And Kearney had the only option of using Dembele because McCormack was too deep. There was no forward passes on for Kearney. The only forward pass really for him was Dembele. And occasionally, you know, when Fredericks was getting on the overlap, getting past, you know, he was forward. But Fredericks can do that. Fredericks can start behind the left back and you can play a ball inside the left back and Fredericks will get to it, as we saw. McCormack
yes.
won't do that. He hasn't got the pace to do that. He's not that sort of player. So, fine, you know, changing things around because you think you see something, but it was a complete waste with McCormack. You might as well have played a natural left winger there than McCormack if we had a natural left winger. The thing is, we probably don't, to be honest with you, at the moment. But it was 4-4-1-1 effectively. It's 4-2-3-1 is another way of dressing it up. But I don't really think that McCormack was far enough forward to be counted in that. You'd almost count a 4-3-3, really, if you're going to do that, with McCormack as one of the midfielders and Fredericks as one of the forwards with Kearney and Dembele. But I don't know, the average positions. Have you seen the average positions out of interest, Rob?
I'm looking at it right now, David. I'm looking at it right now.
How does it look on the average positions?
He's halfway.
Who?
McCormack.
So McCormack's with the other two, isn't he, in midfield?
Pretty much. I guess you could say Ryan Fredericks is closer to Dembele, and then of course Kearney. Kearney is right behind Dembele, and Ryan Fredericks is almost even with Tom Kearney, but Ross McCormack is much farther back, David.
Yeah, that's the thing. It was closer to 4-4-1-1, if you see what I mean. But Fredericks
yeah.
was the one who was getting forward. McCormack wasn't. And what's the point of McCormack playing there? You know, what did they actually try to achieve? You know, in the end, you know, for the first goal, McCormack's right back on the edge of our area, and he's tackling Amabieta, or Amabieta's tackling McCormack, and they're getting each other's way, which led to the first goal, the penalty. So, you know, do you want McCormack back there? No, you don't. I mean, that's not what we're paying him obscene amount of money for as a striker, to score goals. Okay, he got a penalty, but that's not in open play. In open play, he hardly ever got near the goal, really. And that's just not satisfactory. So, you know, I'm not happy really with the lineup. I think he should have stuck, you know, with his two up front. He tried last week, as you know. We started with one up front against Middlesbrough. It didn't work. And he had to change things around. And again, it didn't really work for me yesterday. It was too negative, and our best striker was so far away from the action. Not only it was impossible for him to score, it was difficult for him to assist Kearney and Dembele. So Kearney had very, very few options. And that's kind of, for me, the crux of the matter.
No, David, listen, I actually hear you. Very interesting criticism, because when I watched it back, the one thing that I noticed that there were a decent amount of long balls up to Dembele, and there was a distance between Dembele and Kearney. But what I also noticed is something that you said. There was an opportunity early in the match for Ross McCormack on the left, but he does not have the speed that Fredericks had on the right. If it was Fredericks on the left, I'm just giving a for instance, I think that he would have caused more problems. He does not have that speed. He should not be on the left, and that was one thing that stood out for me while I was watching the match, and I was curious how that was going to work out. And I don't personally, I don't think it worked. I don't think he should be on the left. I think he should be up front as a striker, but this is what he tried. Giannis, I want to go to you. I want to get your thoughts on this, because David brings up a valid point about McCormack being on the left. It didn't work for me, and I really watched it when I watched back the replay. You mentioned that you think that Slavica was thinking about going up against Robinson Kanu on the other side. I want to get your thoughts about this matchup, because I don't think it actually worked.
No, it didn't. I mean, it didn't. First and foremost, Mack is a striker, not essentially a left-sided midfielder. If you look at that average position, I would say that the 10 outfielders are probably clumped within 15, 20 yards of each other. And I think that probably, maybe the tactic was to, you know, bottle up the midfield as much as possible and restrict the space and the accessibility to the wide players. It depends on what Slavica was looking for. If he was looking to try and get a point, because looking at this formation and the way the average position played out, it certainly worked. But then again, having said that, we still go back to the fact that, you know, 8 minutes in, we were in the lead. And that formation at the start caused problems. And really, it just takes one moment to change the whole perspective of the game, and that penalty did. And
yeah.
Slavica talked about, I think, a week or two back about, you know, he was lamenting the personality of the team. And he's technically right, because, you know, they were resilient to come back, but it is fairly fragile. And let's not forget that this isn't Slavica's squad. He's playing the hand with what he has. And I'm sure that he's already made a good enough assessment to know that, you know, a fair majority of these players will probably not be back next year, because they're just not his style, they're not his flavour. So, you know, it doesn't look good on paper in terms of Mack, because you want him up front scoring goals. Having said that, you know, I'll defer to the boss, because he's seen something that he wants to do. It hasn't worked. But at the end of the day, we still got a fairly positive result out of it. And remember, we've got Burnley on Tuesday night. And, you know, I reckon we're going to see something completely different against a top team. But where we have enough horses to hurt them if we play it right.
Okay, very good. And I look forward to talking, David, to you about the Burnley match tomorrow. I look forward to going through that with you. All right, let's now go through the match. Let's go to first half observations. David, I'll start with you before I go to you and just mention some key points I jotted down here. Of course, Fulham had the early pressure like we've all been talking about. Started off very brightly, and in the eighth minute got the goal from Moussa Dembele, which was started off of a corner from McCormack and was headed down to Dembele from Michael Maddle. Excellent situation, and Fulham score. Get the opening goal, and then they actually had another opportunity in the 21st minute. It was a shot by Tom Kearney, and it rebounded out towards Michael Maddle, and it looked like on the face of it that he was fouled in the box. We could talk about this a little bit. David, I want your thoughts on this. You were pretty far away, but when I look back at it, that was a questionable non-call. Let's just leave it at that. I'm curious what you thought of that. Then, of course, in the 23rd minute, you had the penalty given on a foul by Fernando Amorebieta on Hal Robinson-Kanu, and then he scored. I've watched back this. This was the right call, I believe. But then, of course, we can go back and talk about the situation that I talked prior to that. Then, of course, in the 41st minute, Reading go ahead 2-1 when they actually just a really nice goal set up by Ola John, and Robson Kanu just heads it in the back of the net, and they go in the half up 2-1. All right, David, share with me your observations of the first half.
Well, I mean, in terms of our attacking play and the penalty incident, you know, Reading were attacking the goal we were behind, and we were attacking the far end, so it was more difficult, obviously, to see these things. But we scored from, you know, basically from a corner again, wasn't it? I think a set piece,
yes,
situation, a free header at the back post, knocked back in to Dembele, who's connected okay. But we all thought that El Habsi had saved it at the time. There was a bit of a sort of a belated cheer when we realised it had gone in. And for me, that was an error by him. Really, he should have stopped it. I don't think it was hit with great pace. And all day, actually, El Habsi was, you know, when we did test him, he was all fingers. He wasn't coming for crosses. We had a long range shot, free kick from McCormack from probably 40 yards, which he fumbled, and nearly was put in. And really, that was, you know, that's what we were saying yesterday. We got to test him. We got to start really firing in shots and crosses at him, and we didn't do that. Not nearly enough. But you know, it was a good early lead, and we were looking comfortable. But you know, the penalty, I haven't watched it back. I haven't even watched any replays. So all I can say is that from the other end, it looked like a half-decent shout when Maddle went down. But the trouble is as well, we don't know what Maddle's like in these situations. There are some players who make these things look good, and there's some players, you know, who would never go down unless they'd actually been, you know, scythed in half. So I don't know about Maddle's character. You know, sometimes playing in continental Europe, players tend to be a bit, you know, a bit easy to go down, unfortunately. But, you know, that's the case here. I'm sure you've seen Benteke's dive to get Liverpool a last-minute penalty today.
I did see that, David.
It's all over Twitter. And there's far too much of it. You know, we've talked about it before on the show.
I totally agree with
that. Too easily. Yeah.
How about Rackles, David?
I haven't seen it, and I can't give you any more judgment on it than I did yesterday. And at the time, it looked like it might be a penalty, but it was too far away to make, you know, make a reasonable shout on it. But the ref was quite definite in not giving it, waved it away straight away. And of course, not long later, the table was turned when, say, McCormack and Amorebieta were getting themselves mixed up, and it led to a ball played into the box, but fairly harmless one. And you know, it was going to almost go out for a goal kick or a corner. You know, it's a sort of shielding the ball out scenario. And for some reason, Amorebieta has just gone into the back of the player. And yes, he has gone down like a ton of spuds, but there was clear contact. We all saw that. And the ref's given the penalty. And the language around me, I had to move, actually, because although I'm not that sensitive, I just couldn't take the language I was getting around, you know, the abuse and things that were being shouted at Amorebieta by some of the crowd. They were really, really unpleasant towards him. And obviously, they were blaming him completely. No one was blaming the ref that it was a bad decision. Everyone was blaming Amorebieta for such a reckless challenge or a foolish challenge. And of course, the penalty was awarded and they slotted it away. And not long after, you know, we've made another mistake. The first one being, you know, from McCormack and Amorebieta getting each other's way. On this case, Ashley Richards actually made a good clearance, a good headed clearance. Ashley Richards, got to give him credit for that. And it's come to Kearney, and he should have got rid of it, but he didn't. He tried to take a touch and given the ball away. Ola John's got it. He's come into the box. He's chipped it in, and it's been put in. And there was, you know, everyone was shouting for offside at the time. Fulham players had their arms up. Fulham fans were all shouting offside. And I've seen the, you know, the freeze frames which have been put back on Twitter. Which,
what do you think, David?
In fact, well, the freeze frame, if it's correct, suggests that Robson Kanu was behind the ball when he's played. So in that case, he can't be offside. Because obviously, you know, if you're behind the ball, obviously, in real time, it looks suspicious. It looked like, in fact, he was certainly ahead, I think, of the man. He got ahead of his man, so in that respect, he looked offside because he was ahead of the last Fulham player. But I think the fact was, if he was behind the ball when the ball was played, then he's not offside, and the officials got it right. But there was a lot of people shouting at the linesman that, you know, they'd made a mistake, and the Fulham players had their arms up. But at the end of the day, the situation came because of Kearney giving the ball away. It wasn't, you know, it's something of our own making again. The ball should have been cleared and cleared properly. The one time that Kearney was actually back, look what happens. You know, that's why he's an attacking midfielder, because defensively he's suspect. And so, you know, we've shot ourselves completely in the foot, and then, you know,
totally,
we've gone into half-time. Got into half-time 2-1 down from, you know, from starting off in a promising situation. It was only when we gave them that penalty, from the time we gave them that penalty, that they actually came to life. Before that, it was very, very comfortable, as far as I could see. And, you know, bar the penalty shout for us and the free kick by McCormack, there wasn't really a lot else to shout about in the first half.
No, that's actually very good analysis, David. And I agree with your take on the penalty. You know, I would have called it if I was a ref. I definitely understand that. What's interesting about that, and Giannis, I'm really curious your thoughts about the Maddle situation. What's interesting, when the ref did call for a penalty, Michael Maddle went running right over to the ref and basically was pointing, well, kind of like, I'm paraphrasing, but it looked like he was saying, well, what about me? You know, what about what happened to me? So that's what it looked like to me, because he went right over the ref and was complaining about that. I had a feeling he was, again, this is just my opinion, that he was complaining about what was not called for him. So very interesting half, David. But very good analysis, because up until our own mistakes, we caused our own problems. Those two goals were caused by Fulham mistakes. Let's call what both situations were caused by Fulham mistakes. So we have only ourselves to blame. And yes, David, you're 100% right. I watched back. We were very comfortable. And things did go downhill after the penalty. But I still did not feel that Reading were this juggernaut putting us under, you know, under duress. It never felt that way. And that was the part that really upset me about watching the first half, was being down 2-1 and did not feel that should have been the case. But that was our own undoing, the way I look at it. Giannis, what's your analysis of the first half? I definitely also want your thoughts on the Maddle situation.
Okay, let's start with the Maddle situation. I believe that was a penalty. And I think that he doesn't strike me as a player that's going to embellish a dive. And you saw with the reaction to the Reading penalty, he was far from happy. I think, I mean, the ref, Simon Hooper, was getting on the nerves, I think, of the Fulham fans, because he wasn't being consistent. I've said this before, you never mind a bad ref, providing he or she is consistent. So I think we should have had a penalty then. Having said that, the Emma Bieta challenge on Robson Kanu was appalling. It was such a stupid challenge. And I'm the first one to defend him as a player. But God will only know what on earth he was thinking. The lad's going in the corner. He's not in danger. He's moving away from the goal, and he's just pushed him over. It's bonehead. I don't know. And I was a little surprised that Slavisa could have subbed him after that if he was really pissed off. But he did something interesting after the game, which I thought, I know Fulham fans will be a little bit scratching their head, but I see where he was going. He defended Amabiat. He said it was a push that needed to be made. He knows the truth, but I think what he was doing there was just defending his player. It might have been because of reaction from the stands. But Fernando will know it was just a stupid, stupid challenge with nobody near. And as a team, you can't legislate, or coach, you can't legislate against stupidity. And that's about the only way you could say it. I mean, how do you quantify a player doing that? and giving away a penalty when your team's looking really comfortable. But back to the Maddle thing, I think, you know, we were 2-1 down. I thought we were going to come back. I really did. I thought, you know, I tweeted that hope springs eternal. But I know that the gaffer would have been very disappointed being 2-1 down. And I think that Maddle should have had a penalty.
Okay, very good there, Yanis. And listen, I actually do have the head coach reaction. I'm just going to read it to you because this is exactly what Slavisa said after the match. He was asked about the Amorebieta situation. He says, yes, it was a small push, and the referee can interpret it like a penalty. So, Yanis, he is backing his player there.
Yep. Yes, he is. But I will lay dollars to donuts that he'd have given him a bollocking after the game and gone, you know what? He's just defending his player in public. And there's two ways of doing it. I think he's actually done it the right way and said, look, he's defending his player, saying, okay, maybe it had been embellished. I don't believe Robson Kanu did. But having said that, I'm sure in private he just said, look, what the bollocks were you thinking of? Because we were comfortable in the game and you blew it. And we, from that point on, we were on the back foot. You know, once Reading got their tails up and they got the second goal, we were in real trouble. And luckily, we came back. But let's see what happens tonight with the lineup. I'm going to be there for the Bristol City game next Saturday. I'm very excited about that. And I'm hoping that we get 3 points there. That's now looking like a huge, that's a 12-pointer, forget a 6-pointer.
Huge match. Huge match.
Yeah, we have to get a result. Although, being Fulhamish, I wouldn't be surprised if we get something off Burnley on Tuesday.
I hope you're right, my friend. I hope you're right. All right, and just to mention, because we're talking about the head coach reaction, Slavisa was actually asked if he thought it was a penalty. His answer was yes, it was a small push, and a referee can interpret it like a penalty. I just want to mention that that's what he was asked. He was asked if it was a penalty. All right, David, let's now move to the second half, and I'll just share with you just, again, some quick information. Reading put us under pressure right from the get-go. They actually had a really good opportunity to make it 3-1 in the very first minute of the second half, but it went wide. And then, of course, in the 52nd minute, Fulham equalized and make it 2-2 with a really good run by Ryan Fredericks. And he gets taken down in the box by Jake Cooper. And, you know, definitely want your thoughts on this because this was right in front of you. So at this point, the match is 2-2. In the second half, I will say that Andy Longan did have to make some key saves to ensure the point. And really not much more to really share about the second half except some opportunities, like I mentioned, from Reading. The only other things I will mention are the substitutions. In the 67th minute, Ryan Tunnicliffe came on for Jamie O'Hara. 73rd minute, Kaká came on for Fredericks. And in the 81st minute, Parker came on for Kearney. And the only other thing I want to mention, and I mentioned this, David, I want your thoughts on this. You and I both do not like divers. Rackles, to me, is a very bad diver, David.
Well, we've got George Boyd on Tuesday to worry about. As I told you, he makes Josie Altidore look vertical by comparison. I mean, I'm going to have it now. Before you say David Hulley is always right, yeah? See how many times George Boyd throws himself to the floor on Tuesday, because he's the worst one that I could think of out of our current sort of opposition. But no one likes divers, of course. I mean, it used to be something you made fun of because certain players had a reputation for it. But it seems to be almost all players now, unfortunately, if they think they can get away with it. In terms of the second half, the penalty incident obviously was the main talking point, I suppose, the only goal of the second half. And all I can say is I thought it was soft, but in the same way as the one that was given against Amorebieta, the ref had to give it. You know, to be consistent, if he's going to give the Amorebieta one, he has to give the Fredericks one. Because they're both kind of similar sort of pushes in the back, you know, ultimately. Fredericks has got the wrong side of him. As soon as you get the wrong side of the defender, you know, if there's any kind of contact to go down, that's what happens. And you can see why the penalty was given. Maybe Fredericks was already on his way down, I don't know. But Fredericks, that was, yeah, it was the one bright point of the whole match for me, really, that Fredericks was getting, you know, behind his man a few times. He showed brilliant pace, you know, and there was a few little balls, I think Richards played one for him, Kearney played one for him, inside the fullback he's run onto. And it's either for the ref, you know, if the ref hadn't have given that, then, you know, you would really be having a ruck. And actually, that ref, Simon Hooper, he's one of the more, you know, the better represented ones, I suppose. He actually has refed a Premier League game this year. They've got him in that fringe group where he's on the cusp of being promoted, I think. In fact, they're talking about, you know, we have the select group referees who look after Premier League. They're actually going to make a select group two, I believe, from reading something. So they're going to be kind of two. They're going to be part-time. I think select group one are full-time paid referees. That's their job. Whereas they're going to be part-time paid in select group two, as opposed to just being people from other walks of life who have a normal paid career and get paid expenses to ref matches at the weekends. They're going to be select group two part-time paid referees. And I think he's going to be one of them in that. And they're kind of the feeder group to the main Premier League lot. But I don't think the ref had a bad game, really. If anything, he was a bit lenient at times. Fredericks could have easily seen red in some ways. In the first half, you know, we didn't talk about it, but when the ref got in the way of the ball, Fredericks was really cheesed off with it, let's say. I was going to say pissed off, but I was trying not to swear. And he's gone in then and fouled his guy from behind, taking him out from behind. Could have had a yellow card, but the ref's kind of maybe given him the benefit of the doubt because it was a ref's fault getting in the way of the ball, so that shouldn't really make any difference. But then a couple of minutes later, he's committed another foul and has got a yellow card for that. And also the one where ref got in the way of the ball in the first half was one Michael Maddle. The guy went in late on Maddle. He really should have got a yellow card for that. So he was kind of consistent, and certainly the penalty was a penalty. You know, the benchmark had been set for that, and it was nicely dispatched by Ross. But really, I can't think of us troubling Al Hamzi at all, really, second half, apart from that. Lonergan did make, you know, a good save, I think, from John, and it was, you know, cleared by Richards as well. But otherwise, I can't think of any real things. It was just, towards the end, it was just a lack of urgency was really, like, driving us mad. As I say, the substitutions. Once Fredericks went off, and, you know, people are saying he's tired and he was running out of steam, and Kaká came on. Kaká offered nothing, unfortunately. He had one chance to run past his man and fumbled it, another chance he cut inside and shot on his left foot very weakly. And of course, we saw Tunnicliffe come on. He got nutmegged by someone and went and sided him down in revenge and got a yellow card as well. He's, you know, he's become a bit of a hothead since he's come back, Tunnicliffe. I don't know, you know, he has a point to prove or something, but it's not going to be helpful if he comes on and gets yellow cards straight away. Not good to the cause. And then, say, with Parker on instead of Kearney, we really lost any sort of creative activity. I mean, Tunnicliffe went forward is the most forward of the three midfielders, but there was nothing there, just nothing at all, not really. And it was only, you know, the fact that we were held on, and I don't think Reading didn't offer that much either, not ultimately. I wasn't particularly scared that they were going to score. It just, the game almost, you know, fizzled out a little bit. It was a bit of a non-event at the end, and so you come away feeling that it wasn't an exciting game because, you know, the last quarter of the game was really quite dour.
You know, it's funny that you say that, David. I was just reading the head coach reaction. I read a piece of it. And what's interesting, because you and I were talking about the last 15 minutes, I'm just going to read this to you and just get your thoughts on it. This is, again, from Savisa from the head coach reaction on the FulhamFC.com website. Quote, "We opened the game very well, but then made some unnecessary mistakes," Jokanović told the assembled press after the game. "We showed some character in the second half, but it's true. We need to be more solid. In the last 15 minutes, they pushed us." So he's acknowledging that those last 15 minutes, we were really struggling to get that point, David. That's what it sounds like to me. Maybe I'm reading too much between the lines. Is that what you're getting out of that?
Yeah, I think so. As I say, you know, you're taking Fredericks off, even if he's tired. He looked our most dangerous player, really. Taking Kearney off, he wasn't having a great game, admittedly, but, you know, we were left with the same situation with McCormack left midfield, and Dembele was probably even more isolated then, and it was pretty clear that, you know, he had no real intent on trying to win the game. He just wanted to protect the draw, I think, at that stage. And as I say, I mean, a point wasn't a bad result, but it's not a nice thing, you know. I don't think anyone really were that frightened by Reading, the Fulham fans. you know, it was a game that we could have won. They weren't causing us a lot of problems. The very average side, really, in two very average sides on the day, to be honest with you. Whoever, like, showed a bit of spirit and perhaps a little bit of ingenuity at the end may have nicked it, but it was really only Reading who had any urgency at all. It was, you know, certainly not Fulham, and disappointing a little bit, but understandable as well, I suppose.
Okay, very good. Yanis, over to you, and before I go, David, I just want to say I do agree with you. After watching the match, I just didn't think that this was a team that was extremely dangerous. That like you said, being there, you guys probably didn't feel that this was this team that was going to be dominating play. They certainly did not dominate play. They weren't that dangerous the entire match. It was a match there for the taking. I think that's where I am disappointed, but I understand a point is a point, so I can kind of see both sides of it. Yanis, what is your analysis of the second half?
It sort of degenerated into a little bit of a squib. We showed a little bit of intent. We got the penalty, which was a lovely run by Fredericks. And then we just seemed to be playing on the back foot. There seemed to be an inevitability about, although Reading had lots of possession and generating a few chances, there was an inevitability this was going to end as a draw. And as David said, two very ordinary sides that are separated by 9 points, but that played, you know, on the whole, an ordinary match. I mean, I look at the positive side, because for me, for Slavia, this is still evaluation time, and I know a lot of Twitter followers that are moaning and groaning about possibility of a relegation. We're not going down. I'm convinced of that. But what I am convinced of is that, he's assessing and he's sussing and he's looking at players that he wants to keep on board and players he wants to get rid of. He's doing these formations to look at the adaptability of players and to see how they're flexible change or they're resistant, because you base good sides long term on the ability to change and be chameleon like, so to speak. Second half, as I said, was a little bit too drabbish and negative for my liking. But at the end of the day, we did get a point away from home, and it's a little bit of impetus we can carry to the Burnley game on Tuesday, which will be a tough game, but I think a more open game. And we are at home, and I'm expecting Burnley will always take a good following down south, and there'll be a good crowd, and it's a long journey for them. So I'm anticipating it's going to be a much more open game on Tuesday, and I think that Slavia's setup and lineup and formation will reflect that.
Okay, very good there, Yanis. And I do agree with you. I think part of what's going on here is Slavia assessing what he has and what he does not have and what he wants to do moving forward. We're talking about next season, but he has to play for this season, and I think that could have also be what's going on in his mind. I'm not in his mind, but I just have a feeling that some point during the match he probably said to himself, you know what, we got to settle this down and get a point out of this. And, you know, I can see that if that was where he was going on it. But I also think, like you said, I think that he's trying to see what players can adapt to different formations, can play different ways, and who he can trust moving forward. I do agree that there is some of that going on. All right, guys, it's time to look at the stats. And, David, you and I talked off air about this, and the stats do favor Reading, and if you're a Reading fan, I can understand why you're feeling that it was 2 points dropped, especially after we go through these stats. Let's look at the full-time stats. Reading actually had more possession at 53.4% to 46.6%. Total shots, 19-8 in favor of Reading. On target, 6-4 in favor of Reading. Passing accuracy, 79% to 71% in favor of Reading. Reading had 9 fouls, Fulham had 12 corners in favor of Reading, 7-5 key passes, huge in favor of Reading, 17-5 crosses. They doubled Fulham, 32-16 tackles, 19-9 in favor of Reading, duels won, 50-32 in favor of Reading. Aerial duels won, Fulham won that, 15-13. Total passes, Reading had 438 to 398, and attacking passes, they had 291 to 249. All right, my friend. David, what stands out to you with these full-time stats?
Well, like I said to you yesterday, I think really, you know, we were beaten on all of them, and even our old favourite, the, you know, the possession, we were second best on. But I think, you know, especially the number of shots on target, or the number of shots, I should say, you know, were considerably better. Also, that even the passing accuracy, we tend to sort of hold on to the ball and play a lot of sort of backwards and sideways passes, we probably get, you know, maybe a higher accuracy than, it gives us a little bit more, you know, credit than maybe we deserve, because, you know, they're easy passes. But on this occasion, we were second best really on everything. And as I say, that when you look at it from a neutral, just like with the Middlesbrough game, and you look at those ones, the Middlesbrough game, you could have said we were worth a point, but probably in reality we weren't. And it's the same situation, I think, really here, that, you know, we got a point, but where we were at a point, I don't know. I certainly think that Reading, you know, will feel a little bit aggrieved looking at the stats, but we just didn't really kind of progress from where we've been going. We've been in this situation where we've had, you know, been holding on to possession, holding on to the ball, being up on all the numbers without perhaps having an end result. But yesterday, we didn't really even have that, did we? And it's a little bit worrying, I suppose, against a fairly mediocre team that we weren't able to sort of, even away from home, to be in control of any of these things. And we really were second best literally in every field, and in some cases considerably so, wouldn't you say?
No, the stats really do favor Reading, David. And that's what's interesting about this, because for me, I think the stats don't tell me the story of the match. What I watched, I didn't feel, like you said, David, that they were that dangerous. But if you look at just the stats, it makes it look like they were dominant. And I just don't feel that that was really how the match played out. But they, you know, if you're a fan of Reading, I do agree with you. You're probably feeling like you should have won this match. All right, Giannis, what stands out to you from the full-time stats?
I think it was two stats. The first one is the possession, 46.5. It's a little disappointing, but I suppose you're away from home. You know, the home team is you know, it's on them to attack as much as they can. The other one, and that actually concerned me, was the duels won. We had 32 and they had 54. I'm not sure whether that was reflective of the formation or not, but looking at, you know, going back to that lineup and players are sitting on the bench, part of this thinking might have been to have a mind on Tuesday's game. I mean, Parker, Kaká, and Ryan came on. Danny Byrne didn't come on. We've had no mention of Rohan Ince. We don't know where he's gone. He's disappeared into thin air. And Matt Smith again wasn't brought on. And I'm just beginning to wonder here, because we don't have many attacking options. And you would have thought that, you know, his aerial prowess is such that he's going to cause defenders problems. They're back four, central back two. Cooper and Ferdinand are not the biggest centre-backs you're ever going to see. So Smith would have given them some trouble. And he chose instead to bring three midfielders on. Which was a little bit of a surprise, but the duels won, because that's, you know, it shows that the Reading were winning in you know, in all areas of the park. But having said that, they, you know, again, I still think they're an average side, and we pressed the self-destruct button by giving away that penalty. It felt like the longer the game went on at 1-0, there was a greater chance that they were going to start panicking, and we got the second and put them away. But it just took, you know, it takes often a moment of madness, and we had that, and that was the end of that. But the possession and the duels are two stats that stood out for me.
Okay, excellent there, Giannis. And to go back to you with this, and I'm just going to ask you this question, because you just brought this up. We're up 1-0. We're comfortable at this point. I felt after the match, if we got that second goal, that we were going to go on and win this match.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that, or do you disagree?
Yes, I agree. I agree, because up until the point that they got the penalty, Reading really had nothing. They really had nothing. To me, it was they looked a little. They actually looked to me rudderless. They looked all over the shop, and they were struggling. And all of a sudden, they got a blood transfusion in the most unlikely of ways. So, and we looked. I mean, that's one thing we can take away, that with the formation that Slavisa put out yesterday, we did take the lead and we did look comfortable. So that is something he can take. Now, the only problem is, as a coach or as a player, you just don't know when the unthinkable is going to happen. And it was tantamount to getting into a car without your seatbelt on. You know,
yeah.
Bad things are going to happen when you make challenges in you know, susceptible areas. And Fernando did that. I think more hot-tempered coaches than Slavisa would have benched him, would have taken him off straight away. Said, right, park your ass in the end of the bench. And made the point. He could have brought Danny Byrne in. He could have slotted Maddle over to left back. Or hey, Chrissy Beard has played as an emergency centre back as well. So
sure
anything
has.
Just to get him off the air, get him off the park. But he didn't. He kept him out there. He showed faith in him. And I've got to give him kudos for actually doing that, because a lot of coaches would have yanked him off.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, guys, we have about 8.5 minutes left, so we don't have that much time left. David, I definitely want your ratings, but I need you to go through this fairly quickly. Can you do it, my friend?
I will do my very best, yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Lonergan, I gave a 6-2. I mean, he made, you know, a couple of reasonable saves. There was also there was one flat but across in the first half, which he came out and missed and left the goal exposed. And some of his kicking was pretty awful as well, straight out into touch a few times. So just 6 for me. 6 also, I think, for Richards. I think he had a solid game, nothing spectacular, but I don't think he really made any errors either. Did his job just about. For Maddell was one of our better players. I think I reckon probably 7.5 for him. He was fairly solid, did his job pretty well. Got the assist for the first goal. A bit unlucky on the penalty shout, maybe. Amor Bieta, this is a difficult one because I think in the main he had a good game, and this is probably why we didn't see him dragged off. He actually did, if you look at the game, he won a lot of headers from crosses and things and was pretty strong, but he just let himself down completely with that tackle for the penalty. I'm going to give him a 6 because I probably would have given him a 7 otherwise. I'm going to give him a 6 because of that penalty incident. Garbutt, I was disappointed with Garbutt, really. Didn't offer very much at all. Had chances to get forward, didn't do it. Gave the ball away, turned back, didn't get crosses in when we should have done. So I'm going to give him a 5, Garbutt. I thought it was a pretty poor game for him. Fredericks, it was between him and Maddle for my man of the match, yeah. I thought Fredericks, in the time he was on, had a good game. Gave him 7 out of 10. Went off the ball, perhaps a little bit tiredness towards the end. Baird, I'm giving 6 out of 10. I think he did okay. But on a couple of occasions, I mean, you saw in the second half, twice he had these 50-50 crunching tackles with that guy, and twice he lost. And, you know, you want to be winning some of these, really. He did try and move the ball around quickly, which is credit to him, but I don't think he did anything exceptional. O'Hara, I think he had a pretty good game. He was, you know, all over the place, trying his best. Nothing spectacular from him. I'm going to give him a 6.5, though. Kearney, very disappointing for me. I'm going to give him a 5. Gave away the ball for the second goal. Really didn't have a lot going for him. Didn't create much. He was obviously a little bit lost, but maybe with the change of formation as well. Likewise, 5 for McCormack. Really didn't get involved that much. Was isolated out on the wing. Didn't suit him. Didn't suit the team at all. Dembele, I'm giving him a 7. He ran all day. He was running down channels. He was trying to take people on without much support. Did score a goal, so you can't really ask for much more from him than that. In terms of the substitutes, difficult really to rate them. Kaká,
yeah.
I gave him a 5. Came on, did very little. Tunnicliffe, likewise, 5. Came on, got himself booked. And not really worth giving Parker a go because he was on for a very short time.
Okay, very good, David. And you said you were split between Maddle and Ryan Fredericks. Which one is your man
of
the match?
I gave it to Maddle by half a point on the basis he
okay.
played the full 90 minutes and Fredericks didn't.
Okay, very good. All right, Giannis, we've got a little less than 5 minutes. If you could give me your ratings in a couple minutes.
Okay, Lonergan gets a 6. I made a very timely save near the end after Kaká given the ball, got beaten all ends up on the left hand side. But solid apart from that, the fullbacks Richards, I'd have given him a 10 had he not played. I'll give him 6. He didn't really do a lot wrong, but that's not really saying a lot. Garbutt, I give a 6. Garbutt's average position was near the halfway line, which is good, but still wasn't exactly potent. Amabe at a 6.5. He didn't have a bad game, actually, apart from that challenge. But he still worries me because you just don't know what you're going to get and when he's going to do it. Maddle, for me, is a man of the match. He got an 8. He's a beast. Positionally, he's very, very sound. Tough in the challenge. Superb header back for Musa to score. That was a lovely header, even though he was unmarked. And he's a Slavisha pickup, and if that's symptomatic of what the sort of players he can pick up, then we'll be laughing next year. The midfield, Fredericks, I'm going to give a 7. Got the penalty, worked very, very hard. Lots of intent. Beard and O'Hara, I'm going to give them both 6. First time I saw that pairing, you know, on the lineup, I thought, oh, it looks a little bit slow. But they do work hard. There's just not a lot of creativity there, and there's certainly not a lot of pace there. It just looked a little dysfunctional there, but I don't think that's any fault of their own. Mac, for me, gets a 5, and I feel bad giving him that. I just think he was played out of position, and he just didn't get involved. We know he's a much better player than that, but you've got to, you know, Russ, it's a little bit like putting Peyton Manning as a tackle. It just won't work.
Good comparison, by the way.
It sets him up to fail. Kearney, 5, because Kearney had a very quiet game. He looked out of sorts, but he's allowed that. He's been superb for us. And you can have off games, and when you have off games, you want everybody to rally around you. Dembele, a 6. Right place, right time for that first goal. Looked a little scuffed, but so be it. By the way, I thought the pitch yesterday was terrible and an embarrassment.
Horrible.
Championship.
Horrible, Giannis.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely awful. God awful. The subs, and Parker wasn't on for long. I'm going to give Alex 4 because I thought he looked lost at sea, and we very nearly conceded a goal late on when he got beaten on that left and Lonergan made the save. And Tunnicliffe, 5.5, but Tunnicliffe, you know, David said he's got a little bit of a bee in his bonnet right now. Looks like he's chewing on a wasp. He's pissed off about something, but he's a good player, and he's going to take time to get back to match sharpness. So if you put all the figures together, it's like a humdrum performance with the odd good performance dotted in. But for me, Maddle was a beast, and he is a beast. And for that, I'll give him man of the match.
Okay, great. Great show, guys. Hello. Just have 90 seconds left, so we're going to have to wrap this up. Thank you, Giannis, for doing this with me. I really appreciate it, my friend.
Thank God. It's been quite the week. We've had the week of Donald Trump and the size of his hands. unless we say the better. Leicester City winning, which is what an incredible story that is. And looking forward to the game. I'm obviously looking forward to flying over next weekend, but looking forward to the Burnley game Tuesday. That's going to be a good game. I believe we'll give a good account of ourselves.
Okay, very good. And David, I believe you and I will be doing the preview show tomorrow, so I look forward to doing that with you. And a great show today, my friend.
Thanks very much. And Giannis, maybe we'll see you on Saturday, will we?
I think I'm going to be, rumor has it, I'm going to be at McBride's with the missus.
Oh,
so
we'll try and find you then.
Right, we'll be there, then, and I'm excited, but we better get the 3 points.
Definitely against them, yeah.
I agree, guys. Listen, unfortunately, we have to go. Great show, as always. For David and Giannis, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers,
bye,
guys.
All.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Out of the cupboard, you boys and girls, London calls.